This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Nina Reese with us on the program. Nina is president and CEO of the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, one of the leading organizations advancing the charter school movement across our nation. Previously, she served as the first deputy undersecretary for innovation and improvement at the U.S. Department of Education, and before that as senior education policy analyst with our friends at the Heritage Foundation. Nina is with us today to discuss how North Carolina fared in the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools annual report, measuring up to the model, a ranking of state charter school laws. We'll be talking about how our charter schools performed and where she sees room for improvement in North Carolina. Nina, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us on Family Policy Matters.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Nina, as we begin, and for the benefit of our listeners, would you please define public charter schools and explain a little bit about how they differ from what we have known as traditional public schools?
Yes. So public charter schools are public schools. They are governed by an entity that could be a school district, it could be a university, it could be a state. They're governed under separate rules and regulations that still hold them accountable for raising student achievement, but allows them greater flexibility in order to reach their goals. So to some extent, even though they're afforded some freedoms around who they can hire, and how they can structure their school day, what types of curricula to use, and so forth. At the end of the day, the bar on accountability on charter schools is, in fact, a little bit higher than that on the public school system because they are held accountable to raising achievements and holding up to the terms of a contract that they've signed. And if they don't meet up to those terms, they have to be closed. And I would say that that is probably the key distinction between a public school and a charter school. If a charter school doesn't perform or is not able to attract enough families to keep its doors open, it has to close. You know, as really quickly, there are 43 states right now that have charter school laws, and each and every one of those laws is different from the other. So to some extent, defining what it is and how it works is a little bit challenging because each state law is different and each authorizer operates or manages their charter schools differently. But the good news is that, by and large, after being around for nearly 25 years now, charter schools have demonstrated their ability to close the achievement gap, to raise the student achievement of especially low-income students, English learners, and students with disabilities. So our track record so far, especially in inner-city settings where the quality of the traditional system may not be as good, has been definitely on the right track.
Well, that's great, and I think it's so important. As you have just stated, there's a lot of diversity among charter schools across the country in the states that have them. Now, North Carolina has had charter schools in place since our law passed in 1996. How many charter schools are there in North Carolina, Nina, and how many students attend public charter schools in North Carolina?
So you have about 128 charters, at least as of the 2013-2014 school year. You had 128 schools in your state, serving a little over 58,000 students every day. And according to our report, which was just released at the beginning of School Choice Week, you ranked 14th out of 43 states. So your law, is kind of in the middle, so to speak. It has a lot of, it is better than a lot of other laws, but it still has some room to make improvement.
Well, and we definitely want to get into that room for improvement a little bit later during our conversation. How do North Carolina's numbers as far as the number of charter schools that we have and the number of students that attend charter schools compare to other states?
You know, so again, every state is different. You know, the jurisdiction that has the most number of charter schools right now is the Los Angeles Unified School District, but you're also talking about a very large school district, so it goes without saying that the second largest district in the country would have a large number of students in it. We tend to not compare states to one another when it comes to size because so much of the activity happens at the local level. The report that you just cited looks at what's in the law, so what is the recipe for success. In that respect, ranking 14th is a good place to be. But the good news in North Carolina is that you've made some changes to your law, so now you have far more charter schools in the state. But when you create a lot of charter schools, you also have to make sure you're holding them accountable. You also need to make sure that you are giving them enough funding in order to be able to perform with quality. And the funding side of the ledger right now is not very strong in North Carolina. So yes, you're able to open charter schools, but being able to operate them without additional philanthropic support is actually quite difficult, especially if you're trying to meet the needs of students who are behind academically.
Certainly. Well, and I think the quality versus quantity is an important thing for us to keep in mind, because even being school choice proponents, some may often think that, hey, it's ideal to have more and more and more. And while we want to provide opportunities for more, the quality of these schools is so critically important. And the accountability that you talked about is a real key component of that, to make sure that the quality is keeping up with the quantity. Now, Nina, your charter school report uses 20 components to measure and compare state charter school laws. Obviously, we don't have time today to talk about all 20 of those, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to provide a brief rundown of the components that you consider to be most important for charter schools.
Yes, there are 20 components, and they're each weighted differently. So I would say that one of the hallmarks of a strong law is whether there are caps on the number of charters you can open. States that rank well on our rubric tend to be states that don't have very strict caps. And the reason I mentioned strict caps is because Washington, D.C. has a cap, but the cap allows you to still open a fair number of schools, up to 20 a year, potentially. But states like Massachusetts have very strict caps, not only on the number of schools they can open, but also on how much money can transfer from the traditional system to a charter school, so the funding really doesn't follow students to the charter of their choice. So those types of caps are far more restrictive and ones that we try to, we have been trying to eliminate. Being able to open a variety of charter schools so that you are not just confined to a certain type of model, but open to blended learning, STEM education, types of schools that can meet the different needs of the students who are attracted to the chartering space is very important. And a lot of this has to do with the regulatory climate in the state, quite frankly, not just the state, but also the jurisdiction in which the charter can operate. So if the jurisdiction, if the school board is not in favor of charter schools and there's no capability to access a facility, for instance, I would say that that district is probably not a welcoming place. Having multiple authorizers, this is where North Carolina falls behind. We try to make sure that every law has at least two authorizers, so that if you are not able to get approved by one for whatever reason, you have a chance to appeal or go to another entity to get approved. And in North Carolina, there's only one path to getting authorized as a charter school, which we need to change. You don't want one entity to have monopoly over the system. So those are the types of things that usually make up the quality or, are components that make for a strong charter school law. And again, there are 20 of them, so I can go down the list, but those are the main ones, I would say.
Well, I think that's a really thorough review of those that you deem to be most important. I do want to go back and visit one of the issues that you talked about, which was charter school caps. I know that North Carolina had a 100 charter school cap in place for a number of years, and then finally, in 2011, the North Carolina General Assembly removed the cap on the number of charter schools in our state. But from your perspective, why is the existence or lack of a cap so important and impactful on charter school development? I know that we saw not only a limitation on the sheer number of new applications that could be filed based on the number of slots that were remaining, but it also seemed to have an impact on the interest of potential charter school applicants of whether or not they were going to pursue it if there were a very limited number of slots available.
That's a great question. What happens when you have a cap, though, is exactly what you mentioned. Is a lot of people are not attracted to the space because they think they will max out quickly. And the other issue is, to the extent a school is performing well and wants to attract more families, if they want to expand and replicate, they're not able to. And so you create long wait lists, and at the end of the day, the people who hurt the most from the existence of a cap are the families that we're trying to serve. And one thing I should just mention to you is every time we have opened a charter school in a state, that school has generated more interest in creating more schools, and there has been wait lists for the high-performing schools. So the more charters we create, the longer our wait lists become, and we need to be able to systemically address this issue, and lifting caps is one way to do that.
Thank you for that explanation. I think that's helpful. Now, you said that North Carolina ranked in this year's report number 14. How does that compare to prior years? And I know that you had recommendations about how North Carolina might be able to improve. Can you talk about those things a little bit for us?
Sure. So last year you were ranked 16th, so you moved up 2 points, and that was partially because of some changes you made to the renewal process and adding more transparency to the process, which is something that we like. In order to really move up through the ranks, though, and this is important to us because we were involved in North Carolina last year, and we were not successful at passing the legislation that we were aiming to pass, with, you know, funding equity. I mean, that is at top of the reason why you're not able to scale your programs. There's not enough money on the table. You don't have the same amount of money following students to charter schools that are currently following students to traditional schools. So addressing that issue will in and of itself dramatically increase your score. I would also say that, as I said earlier, having other authorizers to be able to authorize charter schools is important. You never want to be beholden to just one entity that's authorizing charter schools. They could be great, but if the governance of these entities changes for whatever reason and you end up with someone who doesn't like charter schools, then you end up freezing the pipeline altogether. So important to have another body authorizing charter schools in North Carolina. Those two things would dramatically improve your score on our model law.
Well, Nina, charter schools have enjoyed growing public support nationwide, fortunately, including support from lawmakers, but there are still very vocal and sometimes powerful critics of public charter schools, especially within the public school establishment. In your opinion, what is the top myth that we face about public charter schools that you feel really needs to be debunked?
I would say the public nature of the schools is extremely important, and where there is the greatest amount of confusion, even with the public, to the extent they support charter schools, they don't know that these are public schools, and our opposition has done a nice job of defining what a charter school is and pointing to some of the aspects of chartering which may not squarely fit into a traditional school systems model. So making sure everyone understands that it's public, redefining the word public so that it's important for people to understand that you can be public and still be governed by an entity other than the school district, making sure that everyone understands these are open enrollment schools, and if you have some instances of something bad happening, that doesn't mean that the system is in general, accepts that. We're open to all students. We have to accept all students. If we don't have enough room in our school, we have to conduct a lottery in order to accept kids randomly. So the public nature is extremely important. The other thing that the opposition has talked quite a bit about in recent years is this notion of, it ties to the public-private argument, is the fact that, the corporations are taking over the chartering space. And so in that respect, again, that is the greatest myth of all, because over 60% of charter schools around the country are governed by single-site operators, and only 20% of them are governed by charter management organizations. These are entities that have created 1, 2, 3, up to 10, 20 charter schools in a state or in a region. So they're not necessarily, when you think about corporate takeover, you're thinking about Starbucks and Walmart. Here you're talking about a school that did well and opened another school next door and whatnot. So 20% of them are governed by nonprofit entities that are aiming to expand their footprint, primarily because they're doing such a good job at raising student achievement. And about 12% of them are operated by for-profit operators, and those for-profits also include online providers.
Well, Nina, unfortunately, we're nearly out of time for this week, but I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can go to get a copy of your new report, Measuring Up to the Model, and also to learn more about the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools.
Yes, so your listeners can go to publiccharters.org. That is our website. You can also follow us on Twitter at Charter Alliance.
Well, Nina Reese, with that, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for your great work promoting public charter schools across our nation and for supporting school choice. And we encourage our listeners to take advantage of the resources that you have available. And again, thanks so much for all that you do.
Thank you so much.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.